Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I am delighted to be with you. And of course, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness, and I am at the San Rafael area of the kitchen table.
Oh boy, we're glad you're there, and we are glad we're here. We're here in Durham, North Carolina. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and it's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well, also at the Durham Inn and the Table. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of an online unity ministry, and our name is the Unity Center for Universal Prosperity.org. And we spell universal, Y-O universal, because it stands for you, and that is your spiritual growth and human happiness.
And we invite you to come visit us at ucfyp.org, and because we like to make it as easy as possible for you to take advantage of all the things we have to offer.
Yeah, and I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com. Well, of course, you can find my calendar as well as The Absolute Word, my weekly blog. And you know what? I was just thinking, Metaphysical Romp 2 is bi-coastal today.
Oh, it sure is. We have a long table, don't we?
We do have a long table. Well, we have decided what the shape is. We keep going back and forth. Anyway, so I was working on some project, but I can't remember exactly what it was. And I noticed a reference to how hard it can be to change our minds and to change our beliefs. And that led me to an article called Why Facts Don't Change Our Minds and Beliefs Are So Hard to Change. That first piece just kind of, I had a mind explosion. Why facts don't change our minds? Because certainly we've been living in an era where it looks like people can't change their mind if the facts change. So Cher, you want to tell us about the author?
Yes, the author's name is Ahmed Bushrika, and he is a doctor, a PhD, and he is the chief data scientist contributing to the foundation of the academic research portal of research.com. His title is chief data scientist and head of content, where he's responsible for the categorization of academic entities into various academic disciplines using machine learning methods. That's a mouthful for a description. But what's really interesting is he is currently a professor of computer science at a National Higher School of Artificial Intelligence.
Wow.
In Algeria.
Wow. I mean, that just blows my mind, right? However, in our prep, we did decide that Bill is our chief data scientist and head of content, for sure. Yes. Boy, and there's nothing artificial about his intelligence.
That's so true.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so this article explores the various reasons why facts don't change our minds. And the reason why I think this is such a good article for us, because we need to be aware when facts aren't changing our mind, and then what we can do about that. And then on the other hand is how, as influencers, we can help people change their minds. So he says, by recognizing our biases and knowing how our brain responds to stimuli, one can avoid falling in the trap of faulty thinking patterns and assess information objectively. And that ties in perfectly with one of our overall themes, which is questioning unquestioned answers. And so I'm just going to read through, because these are the topics we're going to be looking at. We're going to be doing a dive, but not necessarily a deep dive. The first thing is science denial. Boy, we've seen that a lot in the recent years, especially around vaccines. belief perseverance, confirmation bias, which we've danced with, and I'm sure Bill will make it clear for us, avoidance of complexity. I didn't know that one. Causality and the ignorance gap. That's a biggie. Emotions and assessing risk, convincing others to change their minds, and clinging to and changing beliefs. So Bill and Sherry, you have anything to add to that?
Just it was so interesting reading this article because we, especially like as you mentioned, confirmation bias, we have dived into that quite a bit. And it was interesting to see all the other things that some of those terms were new to me. And particularly, I'll claim that. And but I recognize the descriptions. So I think our listeners, when they hear these terms, you may not know what it means. But as we talk about it, you'll go, oh, yeah, I've seen that in people.
Yeah.
And I guess our invitation is to also be willing to look in the mirror and just ask the question, do I see it in myself sometimes?
Yeah, that's a really important question to ask. And of course, we're going to talk about science of denial. And then they give lots of examples, some harmful examples. I think it's such an obvious topic. If we just say the anti-vaccine movement, then again, we might have some anti-vaxxers in our listeners. And of course, we're open, receptive, and embrace everyone. But the idea that, well, the election deniers is another one that we've had in the last couple of years. I don't have much more to add to that. So Bill, Sherry, have anything?
No, because our whole session is based on people seeing certain data, certain kinds of evidence, and simply not believing that evidence or not believing those facts. And that leads to what we're going to be talking about.
And I do think it's interesting, the whole title about facts, because it used to be that was the easiest way to solve a problem. If it was an argument about facts, you could resolve it quickly. And now people won't even agree on what the facts are.
Well, and I think it's easy for us because we definitely have a scientific bent or a scientific bias. And science is mostly about facts. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's jump down because I think we can jump down to belief perseverance, what that is. And he defines it as people's tendencies to hold on to their initial beliefs, even after they receive new information that contradicts or disaffirms the basis for those beliefs. And as a person living with HIV in the beginning of the AIDS pandemic, people got wrong information about how it was transmitted. And so people with HIV/AIDS were shunned by families, by doctors, by nurses, by society in general. And it took quite a long time for the information to get out. A related one has to do with the transmission of HIV through sexual contact. And the science is, if a person is taking antiretroviral medicines and is undetectable, it's a fact that they can't transmit HIV to another person through sexual contact. But that hasn't penetrated yet the general population. So there's an idea of where there is something put out into the public, that belief is taken on, and then changing that belief can be difficult. Bill and Cher?
Yeah, and as I look at his definition of the belief perseverance, when you think about it, people holding on to initial beliefs regardless of data to the contrary, that sounds an awful lot like truant dogma to me.
You got to explain that.
Well, truant dogmas are very strong beliefs that one has regardless of the research that would say otherwise, and they hold on to those beliefs with a very high-walled perspective that absolutely does not want to admit new information that's contrary to their belief.
Yes, yes. And so the next topic is confirmation bias. And I think, Bill, you, if you want, you should just take this one away.
Well, confirmation bias is our tendency to accept information that confirms our views or even prejudices, and then we ignore or absolutely reject anything that contradicts or that's different from that bias.
Yeah, so this is so important. And what I think of is that belief, that bias we have in us, is a filter for all the bits of information that's arriving through our five senses. And there's a very limited amount that we can perceive. And so we will tend to see the things that confirm what we believe and tend to ignore the things that contradict what we believe.
Perfect example. I love the research and believe all the research that talks about how good coffee is for you. And I tend to reject or criticize any research to the contrary. I realize that is my confirmation bias about coffee because I love coffee.
And mine's with dark chocolate and coffee.
There you go. So, and I think we lots of times don't realize these two really go together. I think the first one we talked about in this one, they support each other. They're like walking partners together because we'll only allow in the information that supports what we want to believe. And I know a lot of the people we work with in our groups are bringing up the fact that when they try to talk with other people who have a different belief system, how difficult that is. And, you know, there are times if it's falling into this category where the person isn't open to at least considering, it's going to be one confirmation bias fighting another confirmation bias in a way, and you're not going to get anywhere.
They're not going to meet. And in this article, the authors Hugo Mercier and Daniel Sperber wrote a book, The Enigma of Reason. And they refer to this as, quote, my side, unquote, bias.
I love that term.
My side bias. And according to them, rationality is less about making decisions based on logic, but providing justifications for decisions one has already made. And, I can recognize this in myself.
Think about my side bias or any confirmation bias when you think about it is it depends upon what quote unquote facts you listen to and what the source of those facts are, because oftentimes the source of certain facts have a my side bias, and that's why they cherry pick what information they share.
Yeah, so I don't have any problem with this because my side is always right anyway.
I was going to say, in a statistics classes, that one of the first things they teach you about reading research and understanding the statistics is to ask the question, who funded the research?
Oh, yeah. Follow the money.
The money. And if a coffee company, you know, ordered the research, probably it's going to be positive results about coffee. So,
yeah. And so he goes on to say there is a motivation to prove that one's own belief is the correct one by downplaying evidence and arguments that support opposing beliefs. Yeah.
And you don't have to be in a conversation too long to recognize when that's happening. Because if you give an opinion and immediately the person wants to shoot it down instead of inviting more information, you can be pretty sure it's not going to go anywhere but downhill.
Yeah. So there's a conversation, let's call it, happening within the Unity movement. It's been happening for quite some time. There's those people who have a Christian bias and those people who have a non-Christian bias, and there really are no facts to prove either group. And so neither group is going to budge. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, actually, of course, his particular article doesn't cover this, but when confirmation bias goes off the rail and becomes violent even, it's really called motive attribution asymmetry is the term for that. And what that means is you have such a strong my side bias that the person or people or group that disagrees with you are evil, and you do everything you can to essentially eliminate that threat.
Yeah. Wow.
usually leads to violence.
Wow. And maybe that's what's happening with all these shootings.
I think you might be right.
You know, we can't win the argument, so we start shooting at each other.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow. And then he goes on to say that we turn to stories to justify our reasons, which are really just after the fact rationalizations. Yeah. And boy, doesn't rationalization play a big role? You know, oh, I'm going to have that piece of chocolate cake because it'll be the last time I eat it. Right.
We say we call rationalize rational lies.
Rational lies. Of course you do. Oh my goodness. That's pretty amazing. And I skipped a piece here. And I want to make sure that we maybe include this. So these authors say that human cognition, which is our ability to think, I would assume, human cognition is made up of modules, one of which is the reasoning module. But again, the reasoning module is more about intuition and less about logic, which, according to them, only plays a marginal role. Logic only plays a marginal role.
But don't confuse me with the facts.
Yes, right?
Perfect.
Right? Or the facts just will never confuse me.
I won't listen. Yeah.
I won't listen. Wow.
That's so interesting, the difference between reasoning and logic. I never thought about that way, because you'd think logic would be, I want to say, well, trump reason. I don't like to use the term anymore. But it seems like logic would be stronger than reasoning, but reasoning is more about intuition. So it's more emotionally based, I guess.
Wow, that was a phenomenal thing, that reasoning is more about intuition. And boy, don't we know intuition can be faulty.
Yeah. Right? And we try to change people's minds with logic, but if they're wrapped up in the intuition and reasoning, they're not even going to hear the logic. So this really speaks to a different way to approach people when you want to be an influencer with them.
It definitely does that. And so I think it's probably time to pivot. And so I'm going to do that. Next week, we'll start with the illusion of explanatory depth. Now that's a tease. The illusion of explanatory depth. So of course, at the end of every MR2, we look at the absolute word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this comes from July 2nd. The absolute words are inner guidance, and the affirmation is, I seek, trust, and follow my inner guidance. I seek, trust, and follow my inner guidance. Seeking inner guidance means tuning out my senses and the opinions of others while turning inward. Then, with my open heart and quiet mind, I can better feel the nudge of my intuition, my inner knower. Sometimes I perceive my inner guidance in subtle ways. Just as sunflowers innately follow the sun, I have the instinct to trust my inner knower. Even if my inner guidance surprises me, it always arises in a vast field of peace with no sense of urgency. I have learned to listen and follow it. I hear the still small voice within and give particular attention to any serendipitous circumstances I find along the way. As I do, I strengthen my ability to listen even more deeply. I seek, trust, and follow my inner guidance. And friends, this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off, saying thank you for tuning in. And thank you to my friends, the Rev Drs. Bill and Cher.
Thank you. We're glad that you listened, and we wish you a wonderful week.
Thank you. And we certainly do that. This is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton. And the three of us invite you to always seek, trust, and follow your inner guidance.